Major funding for NJ Spotlight News is provided in part by NJM Insurance Group, serving the insurance needs of residents and businesses for more than 100 years, and by the PSCG Foundation.
Tonight on NJ Spotlight News, woefully unprepared. The long-awaited independent review of the state's response to the COVID-19 pandemic is released, pointing fingers at the federal government, but also saying New Jersey isn't ready for the next crisis.
We collectively failed as a nation and as a state.
Plus, lawmakers look to fast-track new legislation reforming the state's Open Public Records Act. Advocates call it a hit on government transparency.
What the legislature is doing here is frankly threatening all aspects of our democracy, and it's just not right.
Also, not guilty. The senior senator and his wife plead not guilty to new obstruction charges as Andy Kim chalks up another convention win to try and unseat him. And phasing out fossil fuels. Protesters outside the state house keeping lawmakers honest about transitioning to 100% clean energy by 2035.
I believe it's one of the most important pieces of legislation that we can do to protect the environment and our future.
NJ Spotlight News begins right now.
From NJPBS Studios, this is NJ Spotlight News with Brianna Venosi.
Good evening, and thanks for joining us this Monday night. I'm Brianna Venosi. New Jersey was unprepared for the COVID-19 pandemic and remains underprepared for the next big health crisis. That's the assessment tonight from a long-awaited independent review of the state's response to the coronavirus outbreak. The nearly 1,000-page report commissioned by the governor's office was released today, more than 4 years after New Jersey recorded its first positive case of COVID-19, and tens of thousands of lives were lost. The $9 million assessment from a South Jersey law firm zeroed in on actions taken by the governor's office, Department of Health, and Office of Emergency Management, pointing out the state had a number of factors that made it a ripe target for the outbreak. As senior correspondent Brenda Flanagan tells us, the report makes clear it wasn't just the Garden State, but also the nation that failed to adequately respond.
Jersey quickly found itself in the epicenter of the crisis, and it was hit with a tsunami of cases.
Paul Zubek recounted the early days when COVID ravaged New Jersey, when a long-term care center stacked 17 bodies in a makeshift morgue. The pandemic killed more than 33,000 in New Jersey, and according to a new report, it's because COVID caught officials here off guard, ill-equipped, and poorly informed. Zubek's law firm produced the 900-page report commissioned by Governor Murphy in late 2022. Bottom line,
we collectively failed as a nation and as a state to be adequately prepared. At the beginning of the crisis, our federal government failed to provide critical guidance as to the true nature of the COVID threat, which in turn delayed New Jersey's response to the crisis.
Zubek's team dug through data and interviewed more than 500 people across state, county, and local stages. They talked to the governor's officials, to folks in the healthcare and nursing home industries, with families and EMTs and nurses still scarred and grieving from COVID's onslaught.
Our meetings were often very emotional. It was very difficult for the state, county, local officials, service providers, and healthcare workers to relive the trauma that they went through given the death and suffering that they saw.
Zubek said Jersey health officials depended on faulty CDC guidance that failed to recognize how COVID spread through the air. That gave the virus an insurmountable and deadly head start. Coupled with New Jersey's dense population and proximity to New York, the lack of protective gear and bad infection control protocols,
we experienced the second highest death rate in the country during the first stage, with a disproportionate impact on Black and Hispanics during the course of that stage and throughout the crisis.
Zubek's team agreed with scathing federal and state reports that COVID hit hardest at two of New Jersey's three state-run veterans' homes, Menlo Park and Paramus.
Menlo Park and Paramus, at the beginning, had soldiers running those facilities. Okay? They did not have clinical healthcare background whatsoever.
The report praises the governor's strong leadership through the crisis, especially his support of mass testing and vaccination.
It would be kind of irresponsible for me in any way to suggest that any member of the administration was not giving their all or doing the best that they could with the resources that they had.
The report doesn't point to any individual person's failure. Rather, Zubek says it's a call to action, a playbook for the future for the front office and lawmakers.
We now have this God knows how many millions of dollars report that's making calls to action that us as members of the legislature have been begging for 4 years.
Republicans still want answers about why New Jersey's health department told nursing homes early in the pandemic to accept COVID patients. The report notes with hospitals overwhelmed, long-term care was supposed to take in but separate clients with COVID.
As we spoke to folks in the industry that thought that that was confusing, you have to keep in mind, though, that one of the things that was also going on in March of 2020, there wasn't widespread testing available.
The report makes 6 major recommendations. Among them, we need better intel, a robust early warning system. New Jersey needs to enhance and invest in its local health departments, train state staffers. Officials must protect high-risk patients, especially the elderly and people of color. The state needs to weigh impact of shutdowns on business and education, noting New Jersey kept schools closed for too long, and officials must stockpile proper medical supplies.
We need to keep in mind that all the officials we met with were acting in good faith on information they had available at the time.
Governor Murphy commented the report both highlights numerous examples of New Jersey's strong leadership during the crisis and identifies gaps in preparedness and structural deficiencies that must be addressed. I know New Jersey will be better off because of this review, and my administration looks forward to working with the legislature on its recommendations. Zubek said Murphy had no influence or input on the report. He says New Jersey needs to learn from COVID because another pandemic will come. In Trenton, I'm Brenda Flanagan, NJ Spotlight News.
It was a blockbuster day in Trenton. While the COVID review report was being unveiled in one part of the State House, 2 legislative committees were meeting in another, taking up a controversial bill proposing to overhaul New Jersey's Open Public Records Act, the law that allows residents, journalists, and anyone interested to access public documents. Critics warn the fast-tracked bill will gut transparency in government in a state known for corruption, while its backers say the reforms are needed to help towns that get hit with onslaughts of requests. Senior political correspondent David Cruz reports.
It was a packed house on a busy day for the Senate Budget Committee, a Monday morning which saw the committee releasing bills on funding the Transportation Trust Fund and reforming the Affordable Housing Program. But the hot topic was a bill from Chairman Paul Sarlo that makes big changes to OPRA, the Open Public Records Act.
So, that a good way to start, members? We good?
We're good.
Okay.
The bill, which had social media buzzing all weekend, was heard in an assembly committee at the same time and drew rebukes from groups like the New Jersey Press Association, the ACLU, and others. Despite waiting 4 hours, almost everyone who testified was singing from the same hymnal.
Oh, they're going to push it right through. I mean, that's the whole plan here, right? You put this out in no time, you push it right through the committees 2 at the same day, and then you schedule it for a few days later and try and shove it all through before anybody sees what you're doing.
The very definition of OPRA is to open up public records for the public. There is absolutely nothing in this bill that makes it easier for the public to access those records. Everything it does, it increases incentives to deny records. It shifts fees so that it's more expensive for the public and advocates to access these records. It eliminates certain kinds of records from the provision at all.
This is not just about government transparency. OPRA is about quality public education, the environment, and a whole host of other issues that we are able to look into because we have access to public records. So really what the legislature is doing here is frankly threatening all aspects of our democracy, and it's just not right.
Sarlo, who's also the mayor of Woodridge, and groups like the League of Municipalities say the current law allows for onerous requests that tie up municipal clerks with commercially focused requests.
It addresses a number of issues. I'll tell you what that bill, this bill does not do. It does not infringe on transparency. It doesn't block public records. It's simply not in the bill. And I think as the bill gets vetted more, people will come to realize that.
So, that in this room for sure is a minority view. I mean, a lot of stuff that was available before won't be available now. Certain emails, drafts, et cetera.
Well, it's certain elements of you know, the log and other elements, but public records, if a journalist wants a copy of a contract, they're going to get the contract.
It's a problem. The present system has the resources of towns strained trying to respond to many of these entities that make hundreds of requests. That's a problem. And by the way, those folks, or those entities, squeeze out the legitimate residential requests. So there's room here for reform. I'm just not ready to vote on this reform right now.
Your yes vote is not the most emphatic yes I've ever seen you cast.
Well, because the process has to continue. You know, through this hearing today and through a lot of correspondence, there appears to be more work to be done to reach something that everyone is reasonably satisfied with.
The bill has been on a fast track, clearing both committees today, and barring any last-minute intervention, could see a vote in both chambers on Thursday. I'm David Cruz, NJ Spotlight News.
And it was a critical day for environmental advocates in Trenton who showed up in force at the State House to protest and support the clean energy bill. The guidelines for how New Jersey will transition to Governor Murphy's goal of 100% clean energy by 2035. As senior correspondent Joanna Gagas reports, watchdogs claim there's a dirty loophole lurking in the legislation and they're bound to remove it.
Coalition of clean energy groups rallied outside the State House today ahead of a joint hearing on a bill that would have New Jersey reach 100% clean energy by 2035, something these groups say is critical.
Enshrining this commitment into law to achieve 100% clean energy by 2035, I believe, is one of the most important pieces of legislation that we can do to protect the environment and our future.
This is about people's health. This is about people's lives. We're talking about 11,000 jobs. We're talking about energy security. Do you know the most secure energy? The sun that falls in New Jersey.
Yes.
The wind that blows in New Jersey.
Several representatives from New Jersey's utilities and unions spoke about what they're already doing to switch to renewable energy sources like solar. But when asked whether they endorse this plan, they said they just need the state to form a plan.
If this is the goal and we've got it set up and everyone knows what the rules are, we'll make it happen. We need a multi-year plan, like 10, 20-year plan, with all the players involved, so we talk about this stuff and try to figure out the right, safe, reliable, most cost-efficient way to get it done.
What we are worried about is, later on in this decade, a supply-demand mismatch. So we're seeing a lot of fossil leave the system. We got to get that fossil replaced by these renewable resources that are trying to find their way onto the system in order for supply and demand to match.
And the crux of this issue is infrastructure investments into the state's energy grid, says Republican Assemblyman Christian Barranco, who referenced another bill discussed today that addresses that issue.
It doesn't matter how much power you generate. If you do not have the distribution system to get that power where it needs to be. So these two bills, Mr. Chairman, have a chicken and egg problem, right? We cannot talk about revising the state's renewable energy portfolio until we talk about the electric grid modernization plan.
The question is, how do you get there? How do you modernize the grid so it's ready to handle energy from renewable sources? Several speakers today brought recommendations.
Batteries, hot water heaters, energy storage, or EVs, all have an enormous amount of flexibility as to when they operate. But we need the right incentive programs to unlock that flexibility. It can substantially reduce the scale of investment and the cost of grid modernization while connecting and taking advantage of more carbon-free resources.
You know, when I think about grid mod, we really think about three different types of investment. First is the expansion of traditional utility infrastructure, what I often refer to as the poles and wires solution. So a grid mod can look and say, what do we need in terms of additional infrastructure? And then have the utilities build it. The second is utility deployment of advanced technologies on the distribution system that may reduce the need for more poles and wires.
And the third, says Columbia University's Abe Silverman, are investments into brand new infrastructure that incentivizes companies and customers to move away from wires altogether. After hours of testimony, here's what Assembly Committee Chair Wayne DeAngelo walked away with.
I hear that we don't generate enough electricity for what we use now currently in the state of New Jersey, that we get some from outside the state. What I hear is that on the outside, hey, we want more electric vehicle charging stations. We need to promote electric vehicle use throughout the state.
There was no vote on the bills, and today's testimony highlighted the work that still needs to be done. In Trenton, I'm Joanna Gagas, NJ Spotlight News.
On the heels of today's big policy debates in Trenton, Governor Murphy's job approval ratings appear to be holding steady. A Monmouth University poll out today finds the governor's job performance stands at 50% positive among New Jersey adults, with 42% disapproving. Now, those results are down slightly from the start of Murphy's second term back in 2022. And his support is slipping, though, among registered independent voters, according to the poll. When it comes to the budget, less than half, just 45% of residents say they've heard about the governor's spending plan for the 2025 fiscal year. That's a speech he delivered just weeks ago. And the budget process officially kicked off today at the State House with hearings in the Assembly and Senate, hearing directly from the public and taking a first crack at how money will be spent on programs like affordable housing, allowing towns to raise property taxes beyond the current cap, and raising the gas tax rate to help pay for the state's transportation trust fund. Senator Bob Menendez and his wife pleaded not guilty today to new obstruction of justice charges in a New York federal court. The latest allegations are part of a now 18-count indictment returned last week on New Jersey's senior U.S. senator. Prosecutors have charged the couple of conspiring with three businessmen to accept bribes of cash, gold bars, and a Mercedes in exchange for political favors. Two of the three businessmen included in the indictment pleaded not guilty, but the third, Jose Uribe, changed his plea to guilty 2 weeks ago and agreed to testify against the others at a trial set for May 6th. The newest charges against the Menendezes stem from gifts prosecutors say they received from Uribe. Meanwhile, the top two Democratic candidates vying to replace the senator continue their tug of war in the county conventions. Representative Andy Kim on Sunday secured his sixth party line endorsement, this one in Ocean County. That's an area he represented during his first 4 years in office. Kim defeated First Lady Tammy Murphy 86-13%. Murphy, though, recently landed wins in the Bergen and Somerset Democratic conventions for the June primary. And this evening, well, they're battling it out for two more. That's in Mercer and Cape May counties. The conflict in the Middle East spilled into the streets of Teaneck this weekend. It's home to the state's second largest Jewish community. Hundreds of demonstrators on Sunday protested outside an Orthodox Jewish synagogue in opposition to a real estate fair featuring 35 Israeli companies pitching properties in Israel and the occupied West Bank to American buyers. Protesters carried Palestinian flags and signs, chanting Free Palestine and denouncing the real estate company called My Home in Israel because Israel's settlements in the West Bank are widely considered illegal under international law. Opponents also say the company is violating U.S. fair housing laws because most of the properties, which include luxury apartments and villas, are only available to Jews. Police had to block off streets after about a dozen counter-protesters carrying Israeli flags showed up at the event, one of several recently held by the real estate group in the U.S. and Canada. Organizers say the war has spurred Jewish Americans' interest in buying property in Israel, both to support the country and because of a rise of anti-Semitism here. This weekend also brought more severe rainfall and flash flooding to several North Jersey towns. In Fairlawn, more than 3 inches of rain fell on Saturday alone. To help communities prevent the damage caused by flooding, Congressman Josh Gottheimer today touted federal money being clawed back from Washington to New Jersey. Roughly $3.7 million that'll be divvied up between several Bergen County towns, places that frequently deal with flash floods, backing up sewer systems and leaving behind what what the congressman called danger and damages paid for at the taxpayers' expense. In Englewood, a portion of the money will help the town control stormwater runoff and limit the spread of pollutants. In Leonia, funding will stop sewer system infiltration that causes overflows, backups, and property damage. Emerson will get federal dollars to improve drainage systems, and money is slated to help Tenafly clear waterways and stop storms from causing damage to homes and businesses. Climate experts say flooding is now the most common natural disaster in New Jersey and nationwide. The money is part of a federal bill Gottheimer backed that was signed into law on Saturday. In our Spotlight on Business report, a possible fix to New Jersey's affordable housing dilemma. A new report from the Regional Plan Association finds transit-oriented development, these are places where housing and retail are built near commuter rail stations, have been a huge success for the towns that embrace it. As Ted Goldberg reports, restrictive zoning rules, though, are standing in the way of getting more communities to join.
Metuchen has long prided itself as the brainy borough. Leaders say one of their smart policies is using transit-oriented development or including mixed-use zoning near its train station.
We have great neighborhoods in Metuchen, but we now have a more vibrant, engaging, inviting downtown where 25 years ago it was pretty much a dead downtown.
Jay Muldoon is the borough's former director of economic development. He says rezoning played a huge role in revitalizing downtown Metuchen.
When this was a surface parking lot, it functioned more as a park and ride kind of facility, which was ridiculous for a real downtown.
This is what that parking lot looked like 11 years ago. It was replaced by Woodmont Metro in 2016, a massive development that includes apartments, businesses, and a parking garage to accommodate the commuters who used to park here.
272 apartments, about 14,000 square feet of retail.
I was a former business owner in town before all of this happened, and we were the only store in town. So now we have many different retailers in town in addition to our vibrant restaurant business.
Linda Kaskoski is the borough's current director of economic development and says more development will happen in the future. If there's opposition, Metuchen's leaders have heard it before. Muldoon said plenty of people told him Woodmont Metro would be a mistake, and he heard concerns about traffic and more apartments. He says Metuchen needed more housing downtown.
When I hear that, I say to them, so how do you like downtown? Oh, I love downtown. It's so great. There's stores, I mean, there's restaurants. And I said, yeah, but you have to realize none of that is possible without the downtown residential development that enabled all this to happen.
Can other municipalities replicate what Metuchen has done? The Regional Plan Association thinks so. The nonprofit recently put out a report identifying 144 New Jersey stations that could rezone and redevelop. But there are plenty of obstacles to mixed-use development.
Property taxes are always going to be an issue in New Jersey, and those issues, often incorrectly, are tied to almost a fear of children, that there's going to be more housing and more stress put on the existing local infrastructure.
It's the perception of overcrowding and overbuilding that is inherent in coming to the conversation.
Part of it is we've become really in love with our cars, and we've built a infrastructure and communities around the cars, and it's difficult to start to move back to the way that we'd been doing things for hundreds of years.
Peter Kasabak leads New Jersey Future, and he says the transit part of transit-oriented development might be the most important part of it.
It's really important to rebuild a community that's walkable, that's bikeable, that people have access to the transit, and the transit is an important focal point. But what makes Metuchen work isn't just that there's a train station there. There's a big mix of uses there, and there's a lot of people living there.
Advocates say building mixed use around transit could also cut down on traffic. We'll see if other communities embrace transit-oriented development and embrace the approach used in Metuchen. In Metuchen, I'm Ted Goldberg, NJ Spotlight News.
And on Wall Street, stocks slid to start the week as investors await crucial inflation data. Here's how the markets closed today.
Support for the Business Report provided by the New Jersey Chamber of Commerce, announcing its Renew Jersey Business Summit and Expo, March 26th and 27th at Harrah's in Atlantic City. Event details online at njchamber.com.
that does it for us tonight. But don't forget to download the NJ Spotlight News podcast so you can listen anytime. I'm Brianna Venosi. For the entire NJ Spotlight News team, thanks for being with us. Have a great evening. We'll see you back here tomorrow night.
New Jersey Education Association, making public schools great for every child. And RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.
NJM Insurance Group has been part of New Jersey for over a century. We support our communities through NJM's corporate giving program, supporting arts and culture-related and nonprofit organizations that serve to improve the lives of children, rebuild communities, and help to create a new generation of safe drivers. We're proud to be part of New Jersey. NJM, we've got New Jersey covered.
I'm very grateful that I'm still here.
That's me and my daughter when we went to celebrate our first anniversary.
With a new kidney, I have strength.
They gave me a new lease on life.
I'm still going everywhere and exploring new places.
Nobody thought I was going to be here. Nobody.
And I look forward to getting older with my wife. That's possible now.
We're transforming lives through innovative kidney treatments, living donor programs, and world-renowned care at two of New Jersey's premier hospitals.
They gave me my normal life back. It's a blessing.
RWJ Barnabas Health. Let's be healthy together.